It's not enough to identify sources and degrees of conflict and contention in our culture. We've got to look for models of agreement and accommodation if we're to have a future as a nation. And one such model appeared in the 2012 book titled Arab and Jewish Women in Kentucky, Stories of Audacity and Accommodation. Here's part of my conversation with author Nora Rose Musnick. Start by talking a little bit about the communities that you write about in this book.
What you see in the book is the progression of families and their movement. So you have families who started out in eastern Kentucky in small town in the mountains in Appalachia, like Teresa Isaac, who was mayor of Lexington in 2006. But her family, her Lebanese family, started out in Appalachia and slowly moved their way to central Kentucky. Then I also talked with family members of Sarah and Frances Myers, who were Jewish sisters who had an elegant women's store in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. People may recognize Hopkinsville because it's home of Fort Campbell.
Mm-hmm. You know, there is a line very early in the book. It struck me and stayed with me. You were talking about the diversity of these people and the challenge of understanding and the way they've handled that. And you said something like, isn't it strange that you can see in Kentucky what you might not can see together in the Middle East?
And I would say not just the Middle East, but also urban areas in this country. We associate Jews with New York traditionally and Arabs with Michigan, and that we don't expect them to be in places like Kentucky and how we've come across each other and know each other here.
Yeah. I wonder if there's maybe a story from the book that you could summarize for our listeners just to give us a better sense of the world that you're writing about.
Well, one that I think is a funny story is about Sylvia Green and Mike Rawadi, who she's a Holocaust survivor, and he's of Lebanese descent, was born and raised in Winchester, Kentucky. And they're dear old friends, and she's in her 80s and he's in his 90s. And we were having lunch together one day in Winchester, and a woman came up, you know, a non-Arab or a non-Jew came up to us and said, "Mrs. Green, I'm so happy to see you. I was just in D.C. and went to the Holocaust Museum. Have you been there?" And she said, "No, honey, I lived it. I don't need to go to the museum." And then she turned to Mike Rawadi and said, "Mr. Rawadi, do you remember my dad?" And she named her dad. And he said, "Well, of course I remember your dad. My mother always recognized his shoes in the Ku Klux Klan parade."
Oh, my goodness.
So
that's great.
Isn't that a good lunchtime interaction?
I mean, that's exactly right. Well, what drew you to write this book?
It's my story. I'm a Jewish Kentuckian and was raised here in Kentucky. The other part of the story is that my father taught at a small school, a small college here in Lexington for nearly four decades called Transylvania. And he befriended numerous students. And some of the students he befriended just so happened to be Palestinian Christians. And they were from one family, the Ackles. And they would send family member after family member to Transy, and our families melded into this long-lasting friendship that continues today. Mm-hmm. And the eldest member of the family, Musa Ackle, or Sita, which is Arabic for grandfather, when I was in graduate school, I would go see him every Friday afternoon and have tea with him, and he would tell me stories about taking a boat from New York to Palestine and how he fell in love with a Jewish woman on one of those boat rides. And And he would tell me how he peddled goods throughout the American South. And I realized that our families had very similar immigrant tales. Mm-hmm. And that's what spurred me to pursue this work.
Okay. I've got to ask. I mean, can you tell us another story?
Oh, gosh. Another story.
Another story.
I think the Meyer sisters were amazing women. I never met them. They died in the 1980s. Uh-huh. But the ones I spoke of who were from Hopkinsville, Kentucky, uh-huh. and they had this fancy women's clothing store, and they dress military dignitaries' wives. So General Westmoreland's wife would come in there and shop when they were there. And they were sort of rebellious women in a church-going town. These Jewish women every Sunday would have cocktail parties by the pool and be smoking cigarettes and drinking while the rest of the community was at church. And what I love is that our Colonel Kritz, his daughter, would come in there to shop, and then they were sent overseas to Paris. They were stationed there. Mm-hmm. And then she was getting married, the daughter was getting married, and sent for Sarah to be her fashion aide. So I can read you a little bit from the Nashville Tennessean that
great.
Talked about it.
Dude, that'd be great.
Since the Kritz family has been residing in Paris, the bride-elect has attended showings at the famous houses of Christian Dior, Chanel, and Balmain. She found their fashions extravagantly pretty, but Miss Kritz had always dreamed that when it came time for her wedding that Miss Myers would be her fashion aide, and so her dream will come true.
I think
is amazing that they're in Paris and they sent for fashion help from Kentucky.
Isn't that something? Well, I know that in addition to the delightful stories, there are lessons that communities can learn from the book. What are some of those lessons?
The stereotype that Kentucky is not a place where ethnic people live.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I would hope that one lesson from the book is that we are here and we have unique stories to tell, and hopefully someone might listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
The other lesson that I would hope people would take away from it is that I think the inclination is to really separate Arabs and Jews and to think of us as enemies involved in global and biblical proportion conflict, and that actually our lives really overlap and we confuse ourselves and others confuse us to be one another, and the interactions we have are really complicated.
Dr. Mustick, what if you were telling a person why it is important for our listeners to know this book, what would you say?
Well, I think the reality is that Middle East tensions and conflict have a political life in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think anyone who's paying attention knows that those tensions can be really high and the conversations can be difficult or not exist at all between Arabs and Jews. And I would hope that women's words in particular and women's stories and stories that I believe are coming from the heart can open up conversations and offer a possibility to have conversations that otherwise might not take place.
Mm-hmm. What surprised you in writing the book?
Well, I learned a lot more about the Muslim community in Kentucky. I guess what surprised me about it here is the extent to which it's very international. There are people who are from Iraq. There are people who are from Palestine and Pakistanis and Muslims from Africa, and from what I gather, what they tell me is that in urban areas in the U.S., these communities segregate, so you have the Pakistanis all together, you have the Palestinians from Ramallah, and here in Kentucky, where there aren't as many people, that the community is much more international, so they come together as Muslims, irrespective of their nationality and their background.
Oh, that's a great insight, too. What did writing this book do to you?
You know, it's funny because I think there are points in the book where I call the people in the book my interviewees. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a joke because the people in the book have become so much a part of my life that I don't know my life without them. Hmm. And I even forget that I got to know them through the book because it seems like we've always known each other.
The book is called Arab and Jewish Women in Kentucky, Stories of Audacity and Accommodation, and it's just out from the University Press of Kentucky. Dr. Musnick, I really thank you for being with us, and I thank you for listening to our show, and I thank you for giving the public this very fine book.
Well, thank you for having me and all the work that you do.
Now, before we go, the rather doom and gloom tone of my Independence Day commentary last week provoked a surprising number of responses. Listeners that I heard from may not have all shared my exact sentiments, but the level of fear and frustration, the sense that things have spiraled out of control in our culture and our politics, and there is little that any of us can do about it at this point, is certainly shared across political and ideological lines. In recent years, reputable research firms have revealed some deeply disturbing truths about the American electorate. Gallup finds remarkable and rising levels of admiration and support for Putin's Russia among Southern Republicans in this country, for example. Also, Pew is reporting that a shocking majority of conservatives consider our institutions of higher learning bad for America. And it goes on and on. Now, for many of us, it really does feel like Alice through the looking glass. We'll explore all of that in future shows. But right now, in a time such as this, all I can do is urge each of us to not get lost in the arguments and seemingly insurmountable divisions. Take time to be with those you treasure, disconnected from the endless anger and noise of the divisiveness machine. Nourish yourself spiritually in the ways that work best for you. Remind yourself of your priorities daily, hourly, if need be. From the moment in history that we are inhabiting, I don't think there is an easy nor a safe way forward. But friends, we do need to be ready to move forward. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, so much thanks goes out to you. We need your support. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to someone you know, please share it with that person or those persons. Direct them to stateofbelief.com, where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. The community that has grown around State of Belief Radio is active all week long online. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and engage in the discussion. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.